You're listening to Red Nation Online.
Look out. And it equalized just like that. I just give the score, and that score no longer holds because Hercules Gomez has scored his...
Thursday, April 5th, it's another Gang of Four Eastside stand-up. Tim Vickery, Dan Reves, JC Plant, and I'm Ian Clark. And for your listening pleasure, we have another live away pod from Wednesday night as we go over TFC's loss to crash out of the Champions League. While disappointed, we're surprisingly in decent spirits, as for the most part, there's a consensus the tournament has brought the club and its supporters its best memories to date. We're looking back over the game of two halves, the players who made the game what it was, and then looking back again to the last year of the competition, all in the next 40 minutes on Eastside Stand Up.
Don't stop believing. Hold on to that feeling.
Sweet life. A lot of basketball, baseball, football highlights in the background, but I'm going to get here, guys, after the first half looked like we might maybe come away with something, but in the end,
we came out
one ahead of Seattle, losing 6-2.
Sparky, let's rewind here and like sort of go into this how we thought this would all pan out, and then we can sort of frame how we were at the half.
Yeah, pre-match predictions.
Our pre-match predictions were 3-1 for Ian, 3-0 for me, and I was very optimistic.
4-1 for me,
and I just kind of framed it all within like a bloodbath, sort of.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. I basically said if we lose by less than 5, I'll be happy. But it's a thing. The first half gave us so much hope and almost belief that we could actually pull this off.
Yeah, the first half was actually a lot of very pretty football from Toronto. They certainly took the upper hand, moved the ball around the pitch, and I have to say there was a stark contrast between the way they were playing tonight and the way they were playing at the weekend, with a sort of over-reliance in the first 45 minutes on the long ball, trying to feed the ball through to Danny, and tonight where it just was a very clean passing game, where the ball was being brought up the field at the speed, some long passes, but everything was on the floor, and from my perspective, they looked like a very attractive team to watch.
And the second goal was pure class. Nick Schorsma, just a little dig through to Platter on the half volley. Great goal.
So at the halfway line, 45 minutes in, I think everything was to play for. And I think we should all tip our hats to the way that Toronto played in the first 45 minutes. They took the game to Santos.
Absolutely.
And they were certainly, when you say like sort of hostile environment, it was probably zero Toronto FC fans there tonight.
Toronto FC fans were warned to not travel. Some people were going to travel, and the team said, you know, it's best that you not go. It's a hostile environment, the lawless environment.
Yeah.
And best that
so,
you not go.
Yeah, I mean, they did the business during the first 45 minutes. From my perspective, I was really buoyed, and we were all kind of on the conclusion that at the start of the second half, Toronto really had to take the game to Santos and keep that upper hand that they'd had throughout the first 45 minutes.
It's just a shame that they got killed on that 47th minute goal in the first half.
I just want to get back to the first point of where we were talking about, it's the expectations of the game, because it was within 15 minutes the whole game really got turned on its head.
It was magical at that point. Like, the Plata header, he's 4'11", getting his head on the ball. It's crazy.
And then, of course, he gets the second goal.
Yes. But that's a bit of pure class. And I think, to Timmy's point, by not having Danny in the pitch, what you saw is players who have that football intelligence, and Soelsma, who's one of my favorites, you could see how all of a sudden that vision opens up, and Chris passes... that, you know, through balls that just you don't see normally.
Yeah, exactly.
Because everything
exactly.
flows through Danny, and I thought that was a great point that you made.
Yeah, I think they were using their imagination tonight, and maybe that's we don't know, but maybe when Danny's on the field, the mandate is feed the ball through Danny,
or because he's such a big target, you naturally gravitate towards him, because he was last year his goal scoring rate was just so fantastic that you want to give him the ball because you think he's going to do something with
JC, that's why I was very pleased to see that Toronto but they were able to snap out of that very one-dimensional approach to football. First 45 minutes, very classy, a lot of intelligent passing, a lot of individual talent shown, and especially Prada. I mean, that second goal, the classiness on the half volley from about 25 yards out, maybe a little bit more, maybe a little bit less. It looked, he was under pressure with a defender running right on him, shoulder to shoulder, and I think another one cutting in as well from his right hand side. And he just took the ball beautifully and slammed it right into the back.
I just thought the Santos game plan though in the first half was spookily similar to what LA Galaxy did in the last round. Long ball over the top of the defence. You know, TFC rode a lot in that game against LA Galaxy in the second leg. We have to admit it. You know, there's a couple of offside calls that weren't offside. There's a penalty call that should have gone LA Galaxy's way. Maybe Santos saw a weakness there, and they did get two goals from it in the first half.
Yeah, let's talk about the two goals that Santos did score in the first, because they were they certainly showed certainly some naivety at the back between Harden and it certainly appeared to be one of not dealing with your man who you're sort of charged with marking in the correct way, allowing him to get on the inside of you as opposed to the outside.
But is that almost a positive for TFC, where you see that so much of our poor play is coming from our center backs, knowing that our two best center backs are injured and about to come back? Does that then give you hope, saying, you know what, we can turn this around if our one really poor spot is our center backs, and we know we're going to get better when Can and Williams come back?
Well, you're talking about the big picture.
Yeah, it's about the bigger picture. Yeah.
But on tonight's game,
tonight's game again,
it didn't work in our favor. That's what
again, Harden and Estevao were exploited.
Yeah, right? And you want to talk about, you know, Plata was the story of the first half for Toronto, and then Gomez being the story of the first half for Santos Laguna. Where
how do you leave Gomez
unmarked? Especially after the first leg, when he did pretty much the same play three times around, where they found a way for him to kind of go backdoor on either Harden or Acevedo or whoever was on the outside, and they just didn't learn that lesson. And that was sort of when we go into the second half. You know, we're sort of thinking, are they going to make any adjustments? Are they going to figure this out?
And that's interesting, because we did make the point before the game started that certainly what it appeared when they played Seattle at home, Santos Laguna, once they found their weakness and they stuck with it, they didn't have a really diverse playbook. They found the weakness at the back, and then they exploited it. And we certainly discussed before the game that there was a strong likelihood of them finding Ty Harden, who could be considered our weak link at the back, and exploiting him. And certainly the exploiting was sort of across the board, but they certainly found a way to peel off from that last man standing and create a lot of space.
Well, it didn't take much. He just took a little lofted ball over the top, and then Gomez running onto it. And as I said before, it's the same against LA Galaxy. See, Robbie Keane was running onto it, Dempsey's running onto it, but TFC got the luck of the draw there. They got the offside calls and stuff like that. This time round, they were right on the edge of being offside, but they scored the goals.
But if you know that what he's going to do, this is an Aaron Robin situation with his dodgy flapper, where you know what he's going to do and you need to be able to control it. But Gomez is not Aaron Robin. You know what he's going to do. You need to be able to stop that and to account for that. Is that Vinter not de Klerk not doing his homework, and we should probably talk about de Klerk getting sent off. Like, and if you know that this one player is always going to do the same thing, don't you have to account for it and then put a man on him?
Well, it's either putting a man on, but on a lot of those cages that you saw in the first leg that it wasn't the man who was marking Gomez that kept him onside. It was one of the players. It would have been like Harden in the first.
Fair. So
that's where I think the communication was breaking down, that the line wasn't unified. You didn't have someone like Torsten Frings bossing that back line, saying, hey, all four of us, all five of us, up a step. You know what I mean? This guy's hovering around the line. This is what we need to do. And without a guy like that, you know, we kind of made a joke last week that we called Julian de Guzman Frings Light, where it's just like...
Very light, yeah.
Yeah, you know, he's doing the same, he's playing the same position, he's being asked to do the same thing, but he's just not the same player.
But when Frings is in also, he'll drop back, the center backs will split, and all of a sudden you got a 3-5-3.
Right.
And but without him, you definitely have a 4, very close 2. And then I think the gap between the Guzman and Dunfield, and then Silva and the three front players, is just so wide that... it's going to be more difficult to get that connection.
Right.
I have to say that I was very proud of the lads in the first half.
Absolutely.
I was very proud of them.
Absolutely.
They went a long way. They were a long way from home, playing under tricky conditions in the sense that you've got 30,000 people hoping you lose. Like, you're sitting a couple of yards away from where you're playing. And they certainly took the game of Santos. They didn't roll over and have their tummies tickled, as many were expecting. And the first 45 minutes to watch were, for me, very, very enjoyable.
Yeah.
Obviously, the two goals by Gomez were disappointing in the way that they occurred, but it certainly shouldn't be distracted from the way that Plata put the ball in the back of the net on a couple of occasions, which was... I enjoy watching that kind of football.
Did themselves proud, definitely.
Yeah. And I think that's one thing that should be said, is that... I think, like you said at the start of the game, I don't think we would have been sitting here now disappointed.
Right.
I think we would have been sitting here being, oh, that was expected. And I am sitting here now feeling somewhat disappointed.
Well,
fairly disappointed because...
Well, let's move into the second half spot. I'm certain I know where your disappointment stems from.
Well, we talked about Gomez, and then in the second half, it was almost like foreshadowing is not the right word, but... Gomez had that golden opportunity right in the box off a free kick that he scuffs and goes wide, and we're thinking, oh man, maybe the stars are aligning, maybe Lady Luck is on our side. Not even a minute later that we see the play, and the player we've already thrown a few crumbs here, said a few not too many positive things, was a play that I think even Jerry Dobson and Craig Forrest, for all their wisdom, noted that it was a challenge that didn't need to be made.
Yeah,
Julian de Guzman fouls him just on the edge of the box. And
why even? What was he thinking?
Like, I mean, I can understand if he was trying to get in front of the guy, but you just basically run in and like knee him and then send him to the ground.
Like, there was no...
It's just clumsy.
I can't even think of what he was trying to do.
Yeah, and you could see that guy, it was almost like... When it happened, he was like,
gift.
Wow. Yeah, he was like, whoa.
That's a free penalty.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
He didn't do any rolling around on the ground.
He didn't have to. All he had to do was just let it happen.
Like, going into the second half, I was calling for a bit more physicality, you know, really rough them up at their own place, put some big tackles in and stuff like that. But Julian de Guzman doesn't put in a big tackle. He simply runs into a player in the penalty area. It was brainless. Completely brainless.
And that's really, I think, where we had the rug pulled out from under us after that.
Yeah.
I mean, putting so much pressure on Kosic to basically save the game for us then at that point. And then you've got a seasoned team. You've got a seasoned team in their own backyard. They're not gonna take that sort of opportunity.
Great penalties, both of them as well, actually. Great penalties.
Yeah, because then we have the second one that follows it up shortly thereafter. Comical, I don't know how else to describe it. It was just that, you know, that at that point you're just like, well, that's pretty much it. Like, it wasn't going to be our night after those.
So within about a period of 5 minutes, or was it a bit longer than that?
Maybe a little bit longer. Not much though. It would have been 10 at the most.
We basically handed them the game
between 5 and 10 minutes.
Yeah. So we went a very, very clumsy, not even a tackle. I mean, it wasn't a tackle, and then handling the ball in the area. It basically, we dug a hole for ourselves we couldn't get out of, and then the rest is history.
Well, for Acevedo, it's like, you know, it's a man looking very useless using a ball with his hands. You may as well just go and watch the Toronto Raptors if you want to go and watch that kind of stuff.
I want
to think that he didn't know much about it, that his hand was trailing. But really, you're a defender, you're a professional. He's been a professional for a long time. You have to know where you are. Situational awareness. And have control
defender.
Of your body. He's our most experienced defender. That's crazy to think
awareness,
of.
Awareness, exactly. These are my hands. I'm not allowed to touch the ball with them. So what they were doing, like grabbing the ball, almost, it's kind of difficult to fathom. But that's really, I think, like the first penalty was...
I'm okay.
Yes, okay.
I think we're okay.
One more.
And certainly that first penalty did us no favours. The second penalty, I think that was it. Just game over.
Second penalty did us in.
We should probably explain that was a barmaid asking for more beer. She didn't realise there's a massive microphone in the middle of the table. There you go. That's hoop service for you.
I didn't even stop then. I just carried on.
Yeah, like a trooper.
I wasn't going to remain professional there. There we go.
So one thing I'm curious to hear, because I know you're a big fan of Ryan Johnson, Dan.
Yeah.
He disappeared completely. If our one advantage was our size or physicality, shouldn't he have imposed himself more? We saw a couple of decent moves in the first half.
Yeah.
But we saw JC, completely disappeared.
JC, he looked very tired in the first half.
You think it's fatigue?
He looked tired.
He looked tired, and also
he had his hands on his hips and was breathing heavily.
And we're talking about a man who normally uses muscle and pace down the wings. He's not used to playing in the centre of the park up front.
Right.
So we said at the start of the game, he's played in Danny Kuhlman's role. He's not really a great... Well, you can use his head. We've seen it before, but he's not Danny Kuhlman's head of the ball. Really.
He's much better suited as a winger, and so then he's out of position.
He's all muscle and pace.
Fair.
He's not a central... Yeah, he's not a centre-forward, definitely not.
Yeah, it was... in terms of the highlights from the second half, I think we certainly didn't...
You can think of one.
No, we didn't roll... we didn't roll over.
No.
Daniel Henry.
There's an effort. Daniel Henry, the header.
We didn't roll over. And I think it would have been very easy. I mean, it would have not been easy, but it was a distinct possibility that when you go 4-2 down...
After two penalties.
That you're just going to sort of basically deflating. Just roll over.
Yeah. Well, what about a highlight is our assistant manager's sending off yet again.
Again.
The clerk, he's a passionate fella. I don't mind that, see? I think if you're showing passion and you're clearly disappointed in what's happening on the field, I think the players can respond to that.
Isn't his job to calm down the manager, though?
But he's not the manager. So
Aaron Binder is hardly much of a... Isn't it
Frank's job to calm down Aaron? And like basically say, Aaron, have calm down. It's all right, mate. Yeah. Don't worry.
Bob the clerk, you mean?
Yeah.
I think it's reversed.
Bob is very like even keeled, and Bob the clerk's the one that's got
that provides that passion, and Winter will be the
from my perspective. Yeah. I think it's unsettling probably for the players, like they're wondering what the fuck's going on over there, you know, maybe they're just used to it now.
And he's with his bald head and his rather portly stance. I mean, he didn't look more like a football hooligan getting frog marched off the pitch by a policeman rather than being sent to the stands. It's just very unprofessional.
6-2 at the end of the night. That's I think, though, I don't think anyone could really criticise Toronto FC for coming this far in this tournament.
The effort was there. The first ever Canadian team to make it this far.
Yeah, when you put the whole thing in perspective.
So let's also put this into perspective, that this is a team that finished last in the league last season.
It's a poor team, to be fair.
To come this far in this tournament against a superior opposition,
the best stage. Team in
but
a superior
remember,
league.
rewind this a little bit. When we were playing Real Salt Lake, we were expecting us to get like destroyed. We still carried on marching.
We expected to be destroyed in Dallas, and we won. We expected to be destroyed in LA, and we won. And we expected to be destroyed here, and we lost. But the effort was there. I don't think I would call this a destruction.
For a team that's been here, play out how you would have thought it would have played out. Yeah.
I think
the two penalty kicks, the two penalties, it inflates the score somewhat.
I think it's
if you take run of play, it's
you
not
got,
as bad.
You've got a couple of clumsy errors, basically. And I would hate that to be the sort of last thought that anyone had on this campaign from Toronto. Because as you said, JC, this is the first Canadian team to go to this distance in this tournament, playing obviously far superior sides all along the way, and to hold our own. And in the first 45 minutes of this game, we were holding our own. We were punching weight to weight. We did look outclassed. We were playing attacking football, and what I love to see, carpet football. The ball was on the ground, being passed at speed. So I think we should all, everyone who has any consideration or interest in Toronto FC, just sort of, thank them for their efforts.
I challenge another team in world football who has had their fans four times this month saying this is the biggest game in our history. Is there any other team who could claim that?
Fair.
So
now, another point, because I saw this on a competing organization, where some people were actually saying, did we need this victory to save this season? That's ludicrous. It's only April.
This is a great point, JC. So where does this leave us now? In terms of like the season, because now we've got no distractions. A lot of people.
Well, until the Canadian Championship happens, we play Montreal five times,
and we start this cycle all over.
Certainly the main focus now, moving. I mean, after such a weak start to the season,
is the league.
It has to be the league and breathing some life into this. I can't imagine in three more games if we don't have three wins or two wins under our belt, then this season's going to start looking like it's never really got on the rails to jump off the rails.
True.
I mean,
do you see a glaring hole in our personnel apart from the center back, which hopefully will get much better when we get our players back?
We've discussed this many, many times on the podcast, this idea of the spine, and the spine of the team is very, I mean, the quality that you have in the spine of the team from your attacking options, your midfield options, and certainly your centre-back options, really that's the builds a comfort zone all around those individual talents.
I do feel confident with Kuvermin, Silva, Frings, and Kosic as our spine.
Sure.
When they're healthy.
Yeah,
but this is a point that I made at the beginning of the season, and it's not unique to me, but the teams that are very successful can be categorised by two things. They have depth in the squad, and they also have consistency. They don't sort of lurch, win, loss, win, loss, draw. You know, they're consistent. You know, they grind out results. They're not necessarily pretty results, but they grind them out.
Which is probably where we're most lacking.
Yeah.
The three league results are just so poor compared to the Champions League, which have been so high.
And this really is, I fear that we're in a position where certainly it appears as if the squad is built around the performance of two players, with Danny up front and Torsten at the back. With Torsten on a long-term sort of injury, and I think the discussion that we heard before the beginning of the game, that this isn't looking like a three-week injury, this is maybe like a 5 to 6 week injury, or possibly longer.
Yeah, the 4 to 6 weeks was always the original, so I think it's two or three more weeks, basically.
Not having him in position to serve two functions, really the captain, of course, which he does so very well, and secondly, the boss at the back, really organising that back line, as well as peeling forward into a sweeper role, into that Julian de Guzman kind of role that we would expect him to occupy. That it leaves us very, very tactically weak. Moving into the midfield, and certainly what we witnessed at the weekend that's just passed was this two-team appearance where you have your attacking team and your defending team, but there's nothing in the middle to connect the two. And when the ball moves forward, we sort of suffer, and it was patently obvious against Columbus. Well, we just couldn't move the ball beyond the halfway line with any attacking fluency. And that's where we started just hoofing the ball over the top.
Yeah, that gap that I referred to. Exactly, I completely agree.
But this comes from, we don't have the depth on the bench. Torsten's injured, okay, bring on whomever. Or Danny's injured, okay, bring on whomever. Or so-and-so's injured. And we have a very light framework, and it's going to be difficult to challenge in any campaign where you're basically all your hopes are hung on two somewhat aged, I mean, they're not like, they're not walking around on a Zimmer frame, but they're at the final third of their career.
It's basically Arsenal replacing Robin van Persie with Nicholas Bentner.
Yeah,
it's just like a weak replacement.
Yeah,
and that's what's on the bench in the moment.
But Ryan Johnson, we saw tonight, is not a centre forward, and we don't have another centre forward, and in our system, you kind of need that. Like our wingers played point. So well tonight. If you had a proper center forward, maybe that makes a difference, right? If you get his head on the ball.
Yeah, I find the depth that it's like when Kovermans goes out and you kind of like start rotating people around, it doesn't quite refill.
But there's nobody to fill that.
I felt very comfortable though, not seeing Danny on the field tonight. I felt very comfortable up front. I thought that all the elements were in.
But basically, you're playing with 10 players because Johnson is just not involved.
Well, there certainly has to be some adjustment, because I think certainly I think Silva would probably be more of an alternative up front, and Johnson in his natural position on the wing. But I don't think.
Interesting.
Well, I mean, who else do we have?
Or is it Reggie Lamb? He's got some height, some pace. I don't know.
We don't know.
We don't have the depth.
And you want to say, oh, Soelsma would be a better center forward, but he's so good right now on that right wing that you don't want.
He did look weak at the weekend against Columbus.
Well, I mean, he had a couple of really good moves. He was subbed early.
Yeah. But he's had some like okay games and had some great games. Tonight I thought he was quite good. He looked really good against LA on the road.
His Champions League form has been ridiculous.
Big moments.
LA on the road was certainly his best game of the season.
Yeah, that was incredible.
So understanding this is the team that we've got. This is it. There's probably not going to be many big moves or anything
until
like that.
The July period. Yeah.
Or let's just worst case scenario, no moves. This is the team we've got. Like, what are the key ingredients that we can need or require to sort of, you know, get things moving in the right direction? Because no Toronto FC fan can be happy with what they've seen.
You know what? I think having the two center backs, so Williams and Khan. Obviously, I'm riding a lot on them.
So
then you have a rotation.
Can I just dive in?
Yeah.
Adrian Khan. So,
yeah, Khan, absolutely.
So what's is sitting on the bench, but they're not playing him?
He's not fully fit.
Okay.
He's not fully fit yet. Speaking to some of the players, a player more recently, he's like, he's just not ready. He's almost there, but I think we'll see him maybe on the weekend. Now, then if you're looking forward, maybe Pekovic from the academy, who is a great striker, maybe he is that center forward. Depth that you have as that rotation guy, because if you have Silva, Johnson, Lamb in the midfield, I'm confident with that. Plata and Soelsma on the wings, that's fine. Kuvermans, if he's healthy, is fantastic. And then, you know, Dunfield and De Guzman. I'd actually prefer Dunfield myself, but that could be my city bias. Although I do like Dunfield more than De Guzman.
Controversial.
Yeah.
We do.
Yeah,
I think we're small.
I think all four Dunfield fans might be sitting in the same room right now. We've got too much money invested in De Guzman for him to be benched. Too much.
But is that really concerned? I think he's only playing now because Frings is hurt, and you don't have the option to bench him. Right, because who are you going to play?
Someone in the back office is going to say, "How much are we paying this guy?" And they're going to say, "Well, why isn't he playing?"
True. But if you think about it, Donnell Henry, Khan, and Williams, those are your three center backs that you want. All of a sudden, Harden is gone, and Acebal is a depth player, and maybe he plays a defensive midfield position in a game where we've got it in hand, and he just comes in to fill in. And so it's not a poor squad.
No, I know.
MLS
I agree with you.
We need another keeper because Fry is gone extensively. We need a backup who's not an emergency keeper who was called when he was in the shower.
That's why I think that we have to see if this isn't going to be a write-off this season. And
it can't be.
Heading in that direction at the moment. Like
it's three matches, though. Is it?
Three matches, scoring one goal and having
seven.
Did
we get a goal?
Seven scored.
We scored a goal against Seattle.
Oh,
Ryan Johnson scored a beautiful left foot strike.
I mean, that's
incredible.
You can't measure that in anything other than this like sort of dire turns. Three games, seven goals scored against.
Well,
one
then,
four.
So then let's continue on. How much? What are we putting on this weekend's game against Montreal?
And
what are your expectations?
Because
on
that's
that
an
game?
Actual rivalry. We're playing them five times this year, three times in Montreal. The away support is going to be, I think, about 2,000 strong. Very small crowd, only 17,000. They're bringing the MLS average down, by the way. In a cavernous stadium, I think we will have the advantage from a support perspective.
But will we have any advantage on the field?
Nothing, though.
They're struggling as well. And you have to consider as well, they played in Salt Lake tonight. So they're also playing at altitude. They're probably going to have a tough result, and and then they're going to be traveling back. So if anything, we're actually kind of lucky because our opponents in the mid-weekend might be in the same position that we're in.
Let's put our money where our mouth is then. Any predictions for the weekend?
I think TFC should hope for at least a draw. Definitely.
I think we win 2-0. I really think we win 2-0.
There we go. That's bold.
Danny's back in the lineup.
He's
going to score a goal.
Johnson, Sulzma, Silva off the bench. There's a lot of options there.
And then I think
Ken plays.
I'll stick my neck out and say 2-1 to TFC.
So let's say first three games they were just we were distracted.
I think it's a write off because we were distracted and concentrating. Yes.
We were distracted by the Champions League. The season starts this weekend.
I agree.
I would like to think that we could go to Montreal and win. However, I'm going to probably...
Lost against Montreal.
Yeah, we have never lost against Montreal. Coming out of this sort of deflating victory where all these hopes have been so high, I would hope that the team would say, well, fuck it. Let's get on with this. Let's win this one. So I would probably... I would say 2-1 to Toronto. I would hope.
Ian is clearly thinking we're way too optimistic.
I don't know what to say about that. I'm trying to be like, we're going around the table. I'm starting to get pumped. I'm like, yeah, yeah, 2-0, 2-1, and then. But before we started, I was like, yeah, maybe like 1-1, maybe 1-1.
Tell it like it is.
Yeah, that's.
I think that this Champions
my heart
League,
is feeling that
Champions
they can pull it off. Like I'm imagining
Champions
all
League has been a
scenarios.
massive distraction. Not in a negative way, but fuck, the club's had a chance to go to the Champions League final.
Yeah, like in Salt Lake today, their stadium is shit. It's not their home stadium. They've got no support. They've got nothing going forward, really. That old Italian? Like, come on.
That's one advantage.
But he was shit at City.
I mean, like, Bernardo Corradi, like, he is one of the worst players I've seen. Like, he's got such... Like, last time I saw somebody with such curly hair, he was at a mobile, was Owen Hargreaves in the treatment room. Like, he is a terrible footballer. And I wish them the best of luck with him because they need to stick a rocket up his arse.
I gotta really heavily consider that actually in the result that Montreal going forward don't have a lot. No. If you're going to score a goal, it's going to come out of the midfield more than before it's going to come from there. So that's something to consider.
Keeper is struggling so bad.
I have to say that the key certainly for Toronto moving forward is Danny finding some form. Danny has to find some form. Like
I think he's kept the ball up well, which is part of his role.
We saw a glimpse of it at Columbus last week. That beautiful turn on the full volley.
So beautiful.
It was beautiful, but it just didn't finish.
The one against Santos, where he's just above the bar.
He is living off of scraps at the moment.
Yes.
Like he's not getting service. He's not getting service. And those high, lofted balls, I mean, he must stop and think, like, what the fuck is going on? What am I supposed to do with this?
And maybe tonight shows TSC you don't need those high lofting balls. Control possession, get those passes. Like, it's total football. It's what you're supposed to do.
And yeah. the problem with that long ball is Danny doesn't. He's not really athletic and agile. So those 50-50 balls become like 70-30 against.
He's the billionaire's version of Danny Dicchio.
Yeah.
Right? He's Danny Dicchio, but Danny. With much more talent.
He's Danny, exactly.
He lands at his feet, he's going to do something with it.
Absolutely.
But unless it lands at his feet, then he's not going to really...
I have to say, this is very refreshing, right? Danny Kuberman, as we all know, he's a Dutchman. Jay Sheehy, he's from Belgium, and he's very supportive.
Oh, you son of a bitch! So if you never hear from Dan Rouse again, you'll know why. He may get murdered tonight.
That's hilarious.
Belgium are not real people.
Yeah, but you might be the only Belgian that's ever spoken.
No, I'm not fucking Belgian. They're not real people. They're a substandard from human.
Leave that in.
There's only one thing that ever came out of Belgium that was worth any good, and that's Vincent Kompany.
What about all the Fritz and Mules and the beer?
That's Dutch. They just disguised it.
What about the beer?
Decent chocolate as well.
Right.
That was 400 years ago.
What about chocolate? That lovely tobacco?
Last 100 years, nothing
chocolate.
Has come out of it.
Muddy Fields. Yeah, muddy fields are there for that as well.
I don't know what you're talking about.
There's plenty come out of
anyway,
not in the last 100 years.
Anyway, but today's game, Santos Laguna, do you wish him good luck or do you not wish him good luck?
Against Monterrey.
I'm kind of ambivalent, you know, Dan. I'm not really like
to a Mexican club.
At the end of the day, the best team wins. That's what I say. You know, I wish them both success and whatever. You know, I'm not really.
We care who goes to the Club World Cup.
After last week's game, I went on Wikipedia. I saw on Santos Laguna's nicknames, like one of them was the Spanish of the Warriors, but obviously some genius had been on there and put an English translation of this as something along the line of cheating horrible bastards. while I congratulated this at the time, they didn't cheat that much tonight.
No, that was unexpected.
That's a good point.
With a Honduran referee crew,
I
expected a lot of more diving and play acting.
I think Dan made the point during the game that, like, all the time that it was kind of level pegged, they were rolling over and they were diving. The moment that they went a goal behind, they just concentrated on scoring.
But even when they went ahead, we didn't see as much.
That's because they didn't need to, though. It's a tactic.
They did that so much against in the first leg, and even against Seattle.
You deploy that tactic to get an upper hand. If you're already two goals up, what's the
point? Cheating twats. I just expect them to continue.
I was actually, got to be honest, I was a little bit disappointed after the first one because it was so good.
Yeah.
That he thought he was checking for blood on a play that he didn't touch the pitch. I was like, well, at least we'll be entertained by this.
That was in the 12th minute.
Didn't happen again for the rest of the game, like to the extent, at least it happened in Toronto, where it was over. Like, they weren't hitting anyone and they were rolling around on the ground. But anyways.
So that's it. I mean, the Champions League for Toronto, the 2011-2012 is all done. Just go around and give our thoughts on like maybe highlights of what they've seen, and start with you, Dan.
Mine was probably quite simple. David Beckham getting hit by a beer can. That was my favourite.
To me, the result in Dallas, it was so unexpected.
Yeah, that was good.
Our away form at the time was absolute shite. And to go there and win 3-0, that to me was equal to the game in Montreal. The only difference is because I was in Montreal for the miracle, like that one ranks above. But that was our second best game ever.
Yeah, and I guess, you know what, to get on the theme of just the way the last 5 years ago and have gone, especially as a supporter in the stands, and then to get that home game against Los Angeles in the Dome, where I don't know if we ever would have thought 47,000 people, and just the kickoff when it was like everything was going off at the same time was just like, wow. I haven't kind of experienced that for a while, where you've really felt like felt it all the way around the stadium. I can only think of maybe a handful of times where you've really like, wow, like this is what it's about. Not even necessarily about watching, but just being in the stadium.
Where since just like the first year, we haven't felt it like that. Yeah, I agree.
That was pretty good. That was a pretty good moment, I think.
For me, certainly, knowing what a terrible team we are on the road, I'm certainly with JC on the Dallas game. But I also think the away leg against LA was, I think, really... I mean, it was one of those games where we sat down and we just couldn't really believe what we were seeing. Like the fact that we'd had the draw, at home, and it was on the fence. We're going to go there and get spanked, or what's going to happen?
And then you see a Nick Salzman masterclass.
Yeah, it was beautiful. Yeah. It was beautiful. Yeah. And the play that we saw between Salzman and Johnson during that game as well, to see us win with such quality on the road was really, you know, for me, it just. You know, it was very pleasant to see.
And I think that's one of those games where you kind of expect disaster, and it doesn't happen.
And that was,
and it's like, wow. Like,
but
maybe.
I also think tonight's first half probably deserves a like mention as well.
Because I agree.
They did play some very pretty football, and they didn't go out there and just, you know, get taken apart systematically. The second half we don't have to mention, but I think all in all, I think they...
yeah, we don't have to mention. What a great result.
not to get all hip-hop, but you can't knock the hustle in the first half, right?
They did well. So yeah. I think as all Toronto FC fans tonight would say, well done, lads. We're really proud of you.
Absolutely. I think after tonight, it's sadness because we lost, but it's still pride.
We finished it on a high, like on a positive note. I feel really...
This is a positive note, man.
Yeah. Absolutely, I agree.
This will be the first time.
This isn't anything to be upset about. I mean, it's upsetting that we didn't make it through to the final, but at the same time, I'm very proud of the lads for getting this far.
if you had said at the beginning of the campaign last year,
exactly,
you're going to make it to the semi-final, one, yeah, I would have had you committed.
Yeah.
And it would be just, it's fantastic, the fact that we even made it this far.
Yeah.
So look at the quality we beat to even get it here.
This ending brings a tear to the eye. Like, let's make this like the first and the only 6-2 loss where we finish this podcast with an applause, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
I like it. Very classy there. So I guess we're turning in for the night. This is Timmy V.
This is Dan Rouse.
This is JC.
Spark finishes it off. And we're back, I guess, against Montreal. Thanks for listening.
Eastside Stand-Up is the only TFC-specific podcast breaking down the game right after it happens. We want you to get involved. So if you're watching the game at home, or even through the week come up with something, reach out to us on Twitter, hashtag ESSU, or at ClarkRNO, or at Red Nation Online. Email us at haveyoursay@rednationonline.ca and help direct the discussion. Get your opinion across of what happened on the pitch today.